Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles in studio,
and
you are listening to The Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. And we have a special guest in studio today, Father Michael Pratt. Father Michael Pratt, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Again, yeah, we actually did an episode with you in Bartlesville.
Yes.
St. John's before the Latin Gate.
Yes.
Is it Latin Gate?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. We talked about virtue.
Nice.
Yeah, because I wanted to make sure we didn't forget Latin Gate part.
Because
that's his thing. That was his thing. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So we talked about virtue last time. So welcome. I'm glad you decided to come back and hang out with us again.
Thank you. Love being here. This is great.
But you have a new assignment now.
You have a new assignment.
I do. I'm no longer the pastor in Bartlesville. Now I'm the full-time vocations director. So young men who are thinking about being priests, young ladies considering the religious life, I walk them through that whole process.
That's phenomenal.
And you live with a couple priests from the Church of Madeline?
Yes. That's right.
Yep. Okay. I wanted to make sure I got that correct. Father Brian Brooks was there. Used to be there. Now it's St. Benedict.
Yeah.
Father Desmond's at Church of the Madeline now, correct?
Yep, Father Desmond's the new pastor, and then Father Ken Harder lives in the residence as well.
Oh, okay.
Sweet.
Okay. That's great.
Excellent. Okay. Good community.
A lot of ramen noodles.
Nice. You ever put a piece of American cheese in your ramen noodles?
No.
Try it.
Okay.
I'm telling you. You want gourmet ramen? American cheese.
Two words I've never heard together before. Gourmet ramen.
If this is your first time listening to The Catholic Man Show, welcome. We do three things every episode. We open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. We highlight a man gear, and we have a manly discussion. And today we have a treat given to us. Let me make sure. Given to us by Ryan Robinson. Juan, go hit us up on the beverage cam real quick. Go check us out on YouTube. All of our episodes are now on YouTube. But today's beverage is not your father's bourbon. So let's pour a little bit of this, and then we can cheers and then talk about it. Father, I'll let you go ahead there.
It's not our father's bourbon because it's our bourbon.
It's our bourbon. Now, this is actually not technically a bourbon. I know it says bourbon on there.
It says it's not your father's bourbon.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only reason why they're able to use the word bourbon in there when it's not an actual bourbon.
Really?
Yes. It's actually kind of a...
it's kind of like a secret way of saying this is not bourbon.
Yes, and we got to get Juan here a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, so why talk is about, it, tell him why it's not bourbon.
Okay, well, before you do, talk about Juan really quick and what he's doing with what he has on.
Okay, so Juan, you mean his hat?
Yes.
Juan received, he told me this week, he's like, this week end up getting a special gift to myself from the Catholic Man Show. And I was like, okay. That's cool, man.
Kind of made me a little nervous because right. I'm not sure what Juan's going to do.
It's weird that I don't know about it.
Yeah.
So I showed up today and he's got one of our Catholic Man Show hats, except on one side, embroidered. I mean, like totally legit producer.
He has the word producer on
right
it.
There. It looks awesome. Mm-hmm.
So he's really embracing the producer role.
Has Juan ever made an appearance on camera or
has
voice?
Yes. Fortunately or unfortunately, yeah. However you want to look at that. he has, but
it was a spectacle.
Yes.
What do you say? 4 episodes ago.
Yeah. He's no longer allowed on for a little bit.
Uh-huh. So, he did a feat of strength,
but
I suppose
let's cheers. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus. And cheers to Ryan. Why don't you give Ryan a toast?
Wow, hang on. I will do that.
Okay.
So the reason is just a lot.
So the reason why it's not a bourbon.
This is unexpected.
The reason why it's not a bourbon is it's added natural flavors into the whiskey. That's one reason.
Okay.
It's also not at least four years old. It's because it's not a technical bourbon. They don't have to put how many years it's on there. It's not required of them to put how many years it's been aged. So we don't know exactly. Now there is some bourbon in this. Like there is some bourbon, but it's not a true bourbon.
So it's not a bourbon because, you know, bourbon has to be just corn. Is it?
Well, 51%.
51% corn, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's less than that, it's not bourbon. Correct. That's not why it's not a bourbon. So this is 51% corn, as far as you know.
I don't know that for sure. Okay. I can't say that for sure. The main reason why, though, is because it's added flavor.
Definitely the flavor added is honey.
Yeah. There's a sweetness there. There's a syrupy kind of consistency there. That's something.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it is actually thick, but the flavor is a thick flavor. You know, it reminds me of like American honey.
Okay.
Kind of.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You used to love that stuff. Yeah, you went through a definite phase
of American honey. Yeah, I used to put a couple ice rocks in there, pour a little bit of American honey on rocks.
In fact, I found
that was actually before I really got into whiskey.
Yeah, that was like a
stepping stone.
Uh huh. I actually found like a little tiny bottle of it in my cabinet, and I gave it to Pamela, and I was like, "Hey, you are gonna love this." And I don't know if she did.
Hey, all right, give Ryan a toast.
Oh, Ryan, I raise my glass to you. I ask that the saints in heaven raise their glasses to you as well. We thank you for your generosity. And I pray that the goodness of this glass may be attributed to you through the rest of your life.
Amen.
Amen.
Cheers, Ryan.
I was like worried I was about to slip into heresy. You were in that toast. Like,
well, you drug it out. Anytime a toast has to be short and sweet. Boom, boom, boom.
What do the Calvinists believe in? You know, like the atonement.
Yeah.
I was worried I was about to slip into some like
material heresy.
A Calvinist toast there. It was,
and I really help. Oh, never mind. I was thinking, shut it down.
Okay, end it.
This bourbon is actually owned by Pabst Brewery.
No kidding. Yeah,
so PBR. So the whole it's. There's a distillery, and Pabst owns a portion of it. So it's not your father's root beer. It's not your father's ginger ale. They bought into the company and have, I don't know if it's majority shares or not, but they own quite a bit of it. And so this was their first splash into the whiskey. It's considered actually a whiskey specialty is the category that it's in. Since it's not a bourbon, it's not an American whiskey, it's a whiskey specialty.
Okay, because it's not a liqueur.
No.
It kind of, the flavor of
it's
it.
It's approaching that.
It is.
Yeah, it kind of, it tastes like a liqueur.
It has a higher alcohol content than a liqueur.
But it's 43% alcohol, so it's, you know, it's definitely a liquor.
Mm-hmm.
This would be really good if you have somebody that you are trying to introduce to whiskey.
Yes. Otherwise, there you go.
Going the wrong way.
It's very similar to a couple other whiskeys that are in the whiskey specialty category is Angel's Envy.
Oh, really?
Jim Beam.
I haven't had that in a long time.
The Red Stag by Jim Beam.
Is that also honey flavored?
I think so. Or it's either that or the cinnamon.
For some reason, there's a lot of natural honey flavors in bourbon, especially. I don't get a lot of honey when I drink scotch, but I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's the different wood. Well, I don't know, because they use a lot of bourbon barrels to age scotch in. But for whatever reason, I definitely pick up honey in a lot of bourbon.
This would be a good kind of after dinner drink. Yes. It's kind of it's kind of near like a digestivo, you know, like it's kind of in that. It's more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so harsh. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be good after like a steak or something. You know?
Yeah, I'll bet you.
I agree.
Right. And digestivo, you actually went to seminary in Rome.
I did.
Yep. So digestivos, that's something that is very in Italy.
Normal.
It's a commonplace, yeah.
It's normal, yeah. Yep.
What's your favorite?
Digestivo means digestive, and so they will drink it after the meal, and it's usually accompanied with some kind of dessert as well. So there's different types. There's limoncello, which is very sweet, very
That's lemony. What I hear about all the time. It's the one I hear.
Yeah. Yep, limoncello is one. Amaro is very bitter. There's one called Grappa that is rocket fuel, you know.
I had some Grappa recently for the first time at Father Duck's his party.
Ordination party.
Yes, his reception. They had some Grappa. And I thought it was all right.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different taste. I mean, Americans aren't accustomed to the taste. So usually when they first try it, it's a no way, Jose. But then if you just kind of, I mean, like a lot of things, if you just kind of stick with it.
It's a little acquired taste.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. But so is Scotch.
Scotch, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk really quick about why we drink on air. We haven't done that in a while, and I think it's important to refresh because there's new listeners every time, all the time.
We've just got a couple seconds before the music kicks on, but we drink because... we seek to enjoy the goodness of life in its fullness. God made the things of this earth good, and they should be enjoyed for their goodness. And so we wanted to have a good drink. You know, we're not drinking things that are cheap or not intended to be of quality. We want to drink. If we're going to have a drink, we want it to be a good one. Mm-hmm. As a celebration of life, a celebration of friendship, you know, we're all here together. There's something about having a drink together that I think is, you know, bonds people together.
It cultivates, sort of like,
yeah. It's sort of like sharing a meal. And right. So there's so many good reasons to drink with your brother next to you.
Right. And it's always important to drink in moderation.
Always. Yes.
Moderation looks different for everybody. So knowing thyself is very important. When we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. Thank you, Ryan, for this delicious whiskey. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. In studio today, to my left is Adam Minahan. To my right is Father Pratt, Vocation Director for the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma. Is that right? Vocation Director?
Yep.
Okay. I know sometimes there's like particulars about the title for things.
Sometimes it's Vocations Director.
Vocations Director. Okay.
It's a priesthood, religious life. Multiple vocations.
Okay. Okay. Little housekeeping.
Okay.
For those of you here in Tulsa, in the Tulsa area, we have the Rosary Run coming up.
Ooh, yes. Good idea.
Go to TulsaRosaryRun.com. Make sure to sign up. If you don't know what that is, and especially if you're in Tulsa and you don't know what it is, let me tell you, it is a 5K run/walk where each kilometer is sponsored by a different mystery of the Rosary. We will be...
It's where prayer meets the pavement.
Literally. That is literally happening. And we will be running / walking through the Cathedral District of downtown Tulsa. So, TulsaRosaryRun.com.
Also,
it's going to be awesome.
Also, the camp out, the Catholic Man Show camp out. You need to go and sign up if you have not. I think we only have 9 spots left. I opened it last week.
As of this recording, 9 spots left.
So. As of this recording. I opened it up actually Friday. Wait. Friday, our fantasy football draft. I opened it up Friday, and in 4 days...
We're recording late on a Tuesday.
Right, so...
right now.
We've had over 30 sign up.
Okay.
So...
What's the website?
Just go to thecatholicmancho.com. You'll find the camp out there.
Okay.
So, anyway.
So, we are drinking...
Not Your Father's Bourbon.
If you might be familiar with the Not Your Father's... Root beer.
Or ginger ale.
Or like ginger ale, yeah.
Last segment.
I did not. Sometimes I don't pay attention to the things that you say.
I know. Sometimes I don't pay attention to the things I say.
Yeah, well, my wife says that about me all the time, and it's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Let's get into the gear.
Okay.
Let's do that.
So the gear today, the man gear, is a dining table. Dinner table.
Dinner table.
Dining room table.
Yes.
Should we specify the man gear a dinner table apart from a dining room table? Because those two are not always the same.
The idea was the dinner table.
A dinner table.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So it's primarily family-centric, not like guest-centric. Not guest-centric.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Please.
Well, the reason why I wanted to talk about this is, one, I love in the episode or in the movie The Passion of the Christ, when Jesus is making the table and Mary's there and he sits it down. She puts her arms down on the table like, what is this? It's such a tall table. And
yeah.
It'll never catch on. She says, it'll never catch on. And he just kind of laughs. You know, but the reason why is the dinner table was so important back then because it was family oriented. It's where the dad and the mom and the children all gathered together. They sat down. They broke bread together. They had a meal together. They shared what was happening throughout the day together. There was teaching moments that the father gave at the dinner table to the younger children. There's prayer both before and after. Whatever happened to the after dinner prayer?
Yeah, where you pray for the souls.
Yeah. Do you remember that, Father?
Yeah,
what happened to that? I don't remember. Like that, I remember doing it as a little kid. I guess I'm failing.
We never did that. I was an adult before I even knew there was like a Catholic standard after dinner prayer.
I guess this is just me exposing myself that I've just dropped the ball and not done the after dinner prayer with my family.
Yeah, because you knew about it, and that makes it that's worse.
I'm very culpable.
It's worse for you.
Yes, I am culpable. Do you know that there's no, like, I cannot figure out where the bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts prayer came from. I do not know the origin of that prayer, and I've looked it up.
Like, who wrote it?
Yeah, I don't know the origins of, like, where did we come up with that?
No, yeah.
I mean, I've looked pretty hard trying to figure this out. Can't find it.
It's a solid prayer.
It is a solid prayer. Okay, let's talk about the dinner
Father,
table.
For me, growing up, my family always ate dinner together. And I remember being in high school and hearing other people talk about, if we could have dinner together once a week, that was a big victory. And I was kind of confused by that because we ate dinner every day as a family. And I just thought that's what everybody did. What was it like?
Same with you. Yeah, we had dinner together every night.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather on my mom's side was a farmer, and so he gave us as a Christmas present every year half a cow.
Sweet.
And that was like our Christmas, the Pratt family Christmas gift. Present was a half a cow. So we had beef, basically.
A gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
It just kept giving.
Roast beef, hamburger, steak, over and over again. But we had dinner together almost every night.
I want that.
Yeah.
I mean, the beef. I want to have dinner with my family.
Oh.
But I also want the beef.
Okay, but I think that not having dinner together, that's something that's very common in today's age. Right.
Yeah.
Not having dinner together. And that's kind of, I think, maybe this is too sensational language, but I think it's kind of a part of the breakdown of the family.
Yeah.
Is not having dinner together.
Totally.
Because when you don't get I remember when we had dinner together, my dad would always ask, how was your day at school? And it was always, the answer was always the same. Fine. What'd you learn? Nothing. You know, but he
learned school stupid. That's
yeah. But he kept probing and he kept asking questions, and it gave this organic conversation to be with the family. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also the built-in sort of training to how to be a decent human being. I mean, like, this is how you handle yourself at a table. Don't wear that at the table.
Yeah, there's
etiquette. Don't burp like that. There's etiquette that's sort of built in. That kind of comes with it. That pays off later on for sure.
That's a good point. I've never really thought about that, but training in how to have a conversation, how to look somebody in the eyes and say something to them, and how to listen to what they say, you know?
I mean, this is Father Bill Baer, God rest his soul, used to always say this in the seminary, who's our rector. He would say, a father protects, provides, and establishes. So he's to protect and provide for his family, but also to establish them so they can stand on their own two feet when they are older. They shouldn't be dependent on you forever. They should be able to father their own at a certain point.
Mm.
And a lot of that happens at table.
Mm-hmm.
Very,
kind of
very
establishing
true.
Your sons and daughters to become.
And my grandma used to always, when we sat down at the table, no hats, no chewing gum, no hats. Make sure that she even like had our shirts tucked in as guys, like everything. There was etiquette there, and the silverware was all placed properly in its proper state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is important. Okay, because it says it's sort of like getting dressed for mass.
Right.
Setting the table, you know, and doing it right. And just like a mass setting, you know, on a Sunday, there's going to be more candles. Okay. If we're having a nice dinner, maybe you're going to use the real napkins or, you know,
nicer plates.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. You're not going to use paper plates or, you know, just whatever. But the setting should match the purpose. It should match the meal.
There's a certain fittingness to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a really nice occasion, a date. You got flowers there. You have more candles there.
Right.
Et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. When at the beginning of our meal, before the meal starts, I make sure that our boys go use the restroom ahead of time because I don't want the meal to be interrupted with. A lot of times they were using the excuse of I need to go to the restroom just because they didn't want to sit at the dinner table anymore. And it's like, listen, if we're going to do this together, we're not going to be interrupted. We're going to sit down. We're going to have a conversation. We're able to eat together. Sometimes I try to throw in a little bit of learning while we're at the dinner table.
So when you guys sit down, TV on or off?
Oh.
Off.
Totally
off? You can't even see it. You can't even see the TV.
Yes. There should absolutely be no TV.
No screens at all.
So as a kid, I remember it was a rare treat if we got to eat dinner in the living room in front of, you know, like there had to be.
Watching Coach.
It basically had to be like a
MASH
OSU football game on that was.
Yes.
Okay. If it was like the Bedlam game and it happened to be during dinner, we could maybe. And we were having pizza or something that was, you know, easy to eat in the living room, then it might happen. But it was a very rare treat. I want to offer something to the families out there who say, like, well, you know, how do I teach my kids the proper way to set a table? This is going to blow your mind. The silverware had a fight. The knife and spoon were right. So the fork and napkin left.
Oh, the way I keep it in my own mind is left, that word has four letters. Things that have four letters go on the left. So fork goes on the left. Knife, right, has five letters. Knife and spoon go on the right.
Oh, that's good too.
That's nice. Yeah, that's good.
I like that. For those who have small children who cannot count the letters or spell, the rhyme is a good...
Also, whenever you have multiple like forks and stuff like that, you always go small to big.
Yeah, yeah.
I found that out. Mm-hmm. That's something that I learned.
So if you're
trial by fire.
If you're at a fancy dinner, you always start with the silverware on the outside and work your way in. And then at the top is the dessert. But back to the table. Let's talk about the table specifically because your table that you have should match... Your family should match the use. You know, you might watch a movie where the husband and the wife are sitting at the head and, you know, the opposite ends of the table and they're really rich in this huge room and they're, you know, 30 feet away from each other because they're at this huge table. Obviously, that table is not serving the purpose of facilitating these ideas, these, you know, virtues that we're talking about, family virtues. So you should have a table that's the right size.
Mm-hmm.
That's something A to think about. Needs to be big enough.
For the whole family? Yeah.
So you should be able to, I think, accommodate your family and one or two guests easily.
Yes.
If you're going to have more than that, then you have maybe the dining room table. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes, I agree with that.
My table is maybe my favorite piece of furniture in our whole house. It's like about 1,000 pounds, solid wood. It's not really 1,000 pounds, but very, very heavy. It's a gate leg table. Big fan of the gate leg because there's not a leg in the on the far corners. So it's kind of more in the middle, so you can seat all the way around it very comfortably.
Nice.
Highly recommended.
Go have dinner with your family. I think that's the main... Yes. I hope that's what you take away from
regardless
this
segment. Regardless of the type
of table. A lot of sacred events around a table, by the way.
Yes, and we're going to get into that. In the topic, we're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
To the Catholic Man Show, here with Father Michael Pratt in studio. We're going to be talking about the seminary today.
Vocations,
mainly the seminary.
Yeah, we'll be talking about seminary, but we don't want to. I guess this is the Catholic Man Show,
right?
Yeah. You could be a brother without going to seminary.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Recently, obviously. There's been a lot of scandal in the church. That's hit the news a lot. Dave and I decided...
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Dave and I decided we weren't going to do an episode on the scandals that are happening within the church, mainly really because we didn't feel like we had anything extra to give to the conversation. Everything that we would say has already been said. We didn't think that it was at our place to talk about which bishops should be doing what. We didn't feel like that was kind of our place. So we did want to talk about, though, the importance of why we need good men in the seminary today. And I think that it's very apparent why we need good, virtuous, holy men. The church, the building is on fire. We need good, holy men, good firefighters going in there and extinguishing that flame. So, Father Michael Pratt, as the vocations director of Tulsa and Eastern Oklahoma, Diocese of Tulsa and Eastern Oklahoma, who has 20 seminarians in the diocese today, which is way more per capita than most dioceses in the United States. That's why we brought Father Michael Pratt on our show.
All because of you, Father.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Great to be here. We do have a kind of a high number for, even for our diocese, 20 is pretty high. I was recently in a diocese in the East Coast, and they have 400,000 Catholics, and they have about 25 seminarians. We have roughly 80,000 Catholics or so.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have 20 seminarians. So,
I mean, we're no Wichita, but we're holding our own.
We're holding our own.
Big time.
And boys, just wait.
Yes.
Ooh.
I like that.
Just wait.
All right.
So I think that a lot of guys just aren't really sure what happens in seminary, what a seminary, like, what's involved.
Before we do that,
yes.
Can I ask Father about his own vocation?
Nope. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Because, Father, you have a good story, I think. You went to Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. Go Pokes.
Go yep. Pokes.
I'm fraternity brothers with your father, by the way.
Yes, I know this.
Different times.
Yeah, right. Not at the
yeah.
same time.
Yeah.
But anyway, when did you realize, you know what, God's calling me to be a priest?
I would say I first started thinking about it when I was maybe 15 or 16 years old. Father Bob Schlitt, who I later learned was responsible for about a third of the priests in our diocese. He just could see something, and he wasn't afraid to go after it.
Really?
Yep, he brought it up.
What a gift.
Yeah, and he would say, hey, would you like to go to lunch sometime? And you're just like, yeah, of course. I mean, he was sort of this revered figure in our community. And I remember at the meal, after several minutes of small talk, he just says, have you ever thought about being a priest? And I was like, no way, Jose. and then the conversation just started. And at the time, you know, everybody fights it. Everybody
yeah.
fights it. But then...
just like everything that God calls you to do, it seems like that regardless of whether it's the priesthood or not, whatever God's plan is, you just kind of this... I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that. You kind of push back on it.
Yeah. I describe it like Jesus's mustard seed that he uses, that image where it starts off, your vocation starts off very small and almost imperceptible, but then it just starts to grow mm-hmm. and becomes more and more and more, and it becomes very obvious what it is and what kind of plant it is. That's kind of what happens with a vocation. It starts off very small. Maybe some people don't even know it's there. But over time, it just becomes something you're no longer avoiding, but something that you're like chasing.
Okay, so you were about 15.
When I first started thinking
about it. When you first started thinking about it. And then that mustard seed grew.
Yep.
You're in college.
Yep. Yep. So I went to graduated high school in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Played baseball in high school. Went to OSU for two very happy years. Loved it. Sometimes you hear stories of people... like they hit rock bottom and then that's where they started like evaluating their life. I was like totally happy, fine, loving life. And then just this idea would not go away. And no matter what happened, the idea of being a priest was there. In fact, just a couple years ago, I ran into a girl I dated shortly before I joined seminary. And it's kind of funny.
This is your fault. Yeah,
right. And she actually said that I used to like talk about being a priest when I was with her. She's not Catholic. So
oh,
I mean,
really?
You can imagine okay. us like watching wow. a movie, you know, and it's like a scary movie. And I have my arm around her and I'm just like, I think it'd be awesome to be a priest. And they're like, wouldn't that be great? And she was like, I don't think this is going anywhere. Yeah. But anyway, it was something very present on my mind.
Right.
That was not something I came back to once every 6 months, but multiple times a day was, I need to give this a shot. And that's when I joined the seminary.
So there's a lot of guys who are listening right now who would be good candidates to be seminarians. There's guys who are virtuous guys who are striving, who are not sure what to do with their lives. They're kind of probably like what you were, where I don't think I should be a priest. Why should they at least explore the vocation of being a priest?
Yeah, absolutely. Because very few people know they're called to be a priest right off the bat. I mean, Bishop Slattery, our former bishop, he never remembers a time where he didn't want to become a priest. Like he's the exception, though. I mean, most people, it's something that they gradually come across, and it surprises almost all of them. Every Catholic man, if they're not married and they're kind of coming of age, you know, they should seriously look at this as an option, because you just never know.
Okay, so this, let me ask you this. For a young man, what should the order of operations be? Should one discern the priesthood even before beginning to date? I mean, is that something that every man should rule out before dating? Should you just kind of see what happens? Do you think there's like a good procedure? What are your thoughts?
I think Dave says that Dave asked this because we talked to a guy recently who literally went from each order and ruled out each order and was like, nope, not a diocesan priest, not a Franciscan, not a Carthusian. I mean, he went through everything and then said, well, I guess I'm called to be, you know, a husband. And so I think that's probably, is that where it stems from?
I've heard other people say that you should discern the celibate life before you discern the married life. I don't know. I've never heard definitively, you know. I think that was just kind of their opinion.
Yeah, right. That's what that would be, is their opinion. It's really hard to tell a 16-year-old, you need to discern celibacy before you ever discern dating anybody.
Sure,
I mean, right. They're going to say, okay, thanks, but no thanks. Mm-hmm. Different guys have different paths.
Sure.
And so some join the seminary right out of high school. Some join after 2 years, like I did, of college. Some join right after college. Some, they don't get ordained priests until they're like in their 50s or 60s or so. It's kind of a second career thing. And so to say you must do it this way is really kind of limiting how it normally happens.
Or how God can work.
Exactly.
Within each person.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, because, you know, one of the gifts, one of the beautiful things about the priesthood, celibacy, is giving up the good of marriage. And so I guess in some ways, if you've never dated a woman, you don't really know exactly what you're, you know, the fact that you know kind of the good of a relationship with a woman makes your gift of celibacy all the more beneficial?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, again, there's different paths. So some guys have never dated somebody,
mm-hmm.
and they went right into the seminary, and they are happy, holy priests, and that was the best route for them. There are others who are more experienced, who perhaps dated somebody, perhaps were engaged. One of our seminarians was engaged for a while. Maybe even they were married before. Some of our priests have been married previously. It's a different path, and that was sort of the way God led them. But not every path is for each guy, so there could be pros and cons to having dated. So if someone they had those experiences later on in life. Augustine actually talks about this, that even way after his conversion as a bishop, looking back, he still is kind of almost haunted by these previous memories of his experiences with women, and they just keep coming back, and it becomes a source of distraction. So
yeah, the devil can use that for sure.
Yeah. So there's different paths, but
so basically, you should just follow God's will.
Correct. Correct.
Because God might want you to date a good, holy woman before joining the seminary, and God might want you to join the seminary immediately.
Right. Right. Okay. Join the seminary for a year or two, and then after you've grown in virtue, in prayer life, and study, etc., then you discern out, and now you're all the better a father and a husband.
Right. That's what I love about it, is that even if you're not called to be a priest, you still get that foundation from the seminary of learning, you know, philosophy, prayer life, the spiritual life, what you need to do to fight the spiritual battle that we're in. You know, for that way, whenever you get married, you're now a priest of your family, the domestic church. You're not a ministerial priest, but you are a domestic priest by your baptism, and by the vocation of being a husband and father. So now you know that you're supposed to be called. You're called to be, to give blessings and to give sacrifices. It looks a little different than what the ministerial priesthood looks like, but you still have to give blessings and sacrifices.
I also have this theory that if you have discerned out of the priesthood, there isn't a single Catholic single woman in the country who wouldn't date you. It's sort of like the pinnacle of Catholic boyfriend. For like, I just think about all the in our Catholic young adults group, there's a lot of single women, and if you discerned out of seminary, I believe that any single one of them would absolutely love to go on a date with
you. I love it. It happens. You know what I mean? A guy discerns out his last day is on Friday afternoon. He leaves the seminary on a Friday night. He's on a date.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, and she's like gossiping with her girlfriends. The like, famous, oh, and like, he famous, discerned out of seminary. Right.
So one of the seminaries I went to was on a college campus. And one of the famous prayers of the Catholic women was, Lord, if you give me one seminarian, I'll give you four.
Oh, that is so great. We're going to pick up this conversation right after the break. We got to pay our bills. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Oh, raise the glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan and Father Michael Pratt. We're talking about vocations today. We've been sipping on some Not Your Father's Bourbon by Ryan Robinson. A gift from Ryan Robinson.
He didn't distill it.
Right. Yeah, he didn't make it. He got it for us, though. And I'm oh so glad. We talked about a man table. We talked about a man table. A dinner table. So the man gear. And now we're talking about vocations. I don't know if you can read my shirt in the camera, but I'm actually not a PETA supporter. I can see it. And the little words underneath, I don't know if you can read it, but it says PETA, people eating tasty animals. Okay, so
just disclaimer.
Just didn't want anyone to get the wrong impression.
You had a rep to keep.
By my shirt. So I recently turned 32 this last weekend.
Meaning to bring that up, you old man.
And then on Monday, we played in a wiffle ball tournament.
Yes.
And there's got to be something about turning 32 that just really ages you hard.
Because you're a little sore?
I am so sore. Oh.
Hey, we did pretty well, though.
It was painful.
It was you and your wife, me and my wife, and your sister on one team. So we had a team, dominant girls over guys. We were the only team that had more girls than guys.
Yeah.
And the only two games we lost were to the number one and number two team.
Yeah.
So
we did pretty well. And I forgot you played baseball in high school. I'm calling you next year to be on my team.
Yeah, you're going to be on our team next year.
I also really like wiffle ball.
Do you?
A lot.
Do you know Christopher Hanisch?
Yes.
Okay. Have you been to his house?
No.
Don't let me forget to show you pictures after the episode.
We'll make this happen.
Okay.
You
so we're talking about
freak out.
We're talking about seminary. There's guys who are listening right now, considering seminary, but they have no idea what to do next. Who do they call? What do they do? What should they expect in seminary?
Sure. I would say the first thing is to stop doing it like by yourself. Like we're not good judges of ourselves. Athletes have coaches. Mm-hmm. Musicians have people there directing the whole time. Yeah. So I would recommend talking to a local priest, your pastor, for example, or someone your campus minister, and just start the conversation. Hey, I'm thinking about this. What is your life like? Ask them 1,000 questions. What are your hobbies? How did you become a priest? What are books that you read? Just start firing away and really get to know what a priest is like. And you're going to find out they're very different, each guy. But that alone just helps break down barriers when they realize, okay, this is a priest and he's like a kind of a guy, you know, and he likes this and he likes this and he likes this. And I like this, you know, like we have that in common. Mm-hmm. That alone just starts to break down barriers that this is not some lofty thing. This is not some out of this world thing. This is a legitimate vocation where God uses humanity.
Right. And you don't have to be like super holy to get into seminary.
Yes, you do. In Tulsa, you do.
In Tulsa. You're not holy
yet. For those who are super holy, we send to Oklahoma City.
So you travel around, though, and you see a lot of different seminaries.
Yeah.
And apparently, you were telling me off air before we started that the seminary's on fire right now. There are a lot of guys like
in a good way on
fire.
In a
good way. Yeah. Like wanting to help the church.
Yes. In fact, you know, just in light of all the scandals, the crisis, the what's, you know, all those questions that are happening, that social media is going nuts with it. I talk with people who are thinking about becoming seminarians all the time. I talk with seminarians all the time. This is what I do full time. And to be honest with you, it has not slowed them down. If they're at that point, they realize the church is from Christ. They realize the church is his bride, that it's of divine origin, and that sin exists in the church, but it's not the essence of the church. They realize that at this point. And so when I talk to them, I always ask them, and it comes up in conversation quite a bit. It's a hot topic today. But the scandals today have not I've not talked to one that's been like, okay, that's it. You know what? I'm out. I'm done. I'm not thinking about this anymore. That's not for me. If anything, it's the very opposite. It's kind of become just hearing them talk like a call to arms. Like, yeah, they are saying,
that's how men should respond.
Like, okay, I love my church. It's got some big problems. I want to be a holy priest. If God wants me to be a holy priest, I will do it. I will do it.
Right.
For the glory of Rome.
For the glory of Rome and Catholic Church. Yeah. So it's been really inspiring. I mean, just like when the Pennsylvania report came out that day, I'd made the mistake of reading report after report for like 2 hours. And I was just
bummed.
You get totally bummed.
You get sucked into it. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was bummed. And then all of a sudden a text message came in, and it was a guy who's he's right now starting to become a medical doctor. And he said, hey, when's the next seminary visit? I'd like to get it on my calendar. It was like the day of.
Boom.
Like, the next day, talked to this other seminary.
He obviously didn't have Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just in talking with him, it's not slowed them down. If anything, it's kind of inspired them to.
So what does year excellent. One look like? What you say, okay, I'm getting into the seminary. I'm going to go. What should they expect year one? Like, you're going to probably be with a bunch of guys you probably don't know. Like, what's it like?
Yeah. So first of all, there's a misconception right off the bat. I need to know I'm called to be a priest 100% and then I'll join the seminary. That is a misconception.
Okay.
Most people, most guys, almost all of them are not sure if they're called to be a priest or not when they join the seminary. They join to answer that very question. The equivalent is like declaring a major. Like you're thinking about architecture, you've learned a lot about it. Now you want to go to school, study it formally, talk to other architecture students, talk to other architects. And in that environment, if you realize this shoe does not fit, then you go. You go to another major. Mm-hmm. The same is true for seminary. That's where you dive in. So you're practicing Catholic, you're growing in virtue, you've had this inclination for a while. When the time is right, you just join. You join to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And it's there at the seminary that you're going to daily mass, you have spiritual direction every other week, you're formally studying the faith, you're diving into the catechism, you're doing ministry opportunities every week, you are with other guys from multiple states who are also thinking about the same thing, you're in contact with priests all the time, you're learning how to make excellent confessions, you're studying prayer, you're studying the lives of the saints. If in that environment, that you're kind of like, I don't really think so. That's good, healthy discernment. Go. That's the seminary has done its job.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. But in that environment, if you're like, okay, this is, I like this. Uh-huh. I like this and I want to continue doing this. If that's the case, then we recommend that they come back another year.
So it's kind of like there's a girl that you've got to know a little bit. She's a good, virtuous woman and you want to pursue a more serious, like a serious dating relationship with. You know, it's not like...
Almost like you're courting her now?
It's not like, oh, I think I'd like to be Catholic. Why don't I join the seminary? You know, it's like, no, you need to be Catholic, probably have a foundation in the faith. You know, it's not... So, like, if you went through RCIA, like, last year, what, you know, how interested does one need to be? Before, I mean, I guess the answer is it probably depends, you know?
Yeah.
Reach out to your vocation director.
But that, I mean, that's why the vocation director's here.
Yeah.
Because he's there, he's skilled in this. And he kind of knows the seminaries, he knows you, he knows your maturity level, he knows a lot about you. And he can help determine, is this the right time for you to join the seminary or not? That's why the vocation director's here.
So 1 year's done, what happens next? How many years total?
So anywhere from 6 to 8 years to become a priest.
Okay, and how do they get, you know, there's seminaries all over the place, all over the U.S., and then some of them get shipped off to Rome. How do they figure out where to go? Do they figure that out? Does the bishop assign them? What happens?
Yeah, so we use the first step of seminaries, they study philosophy. the second step of seminary, they study theology. For each of those, our diocese uses kind of a more rural seminary in Conception, Missouri, and a more urban seminary in Dallas, Texas. And we match it up according to the guy, what will be the better fit. The same is true for theology.
And some in Rome, like yourself.
And some go to Rome as well. Yeah. Yep. So ultimately, it's the bishop's decision, but the guy gets to know those seminaries and studies about them. The vocation director kind of weighs in, and we take that kind of his recommendation, the vocation director's recommendation, and we submit it to the bishop, who ultimately makes the decision.
Okay, so this, I'm going to ask a bad question. I'm a dumb question, but maybe it's not a dumb question, but is joining the seminary is like, oh, you just weren't manly enough to get married, you know? So you joined. I don't mean that to be insulting. I think that there's some people who have kind of a misconception about, like, oh, you know, you're a priest, you know, because you couldn't date or something. Is that? That's not true, right?
No, go to the seminary and meet some of the guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
They're very, very, very talented. Some of them have never dated. Some mm-hmm. of them have never dated because it was their choice, and they were pursuing chastity. And so they, it's a wide variety. But that's the place that you are in that environment doing priesty things all the time. And if you find that shoe fits, then you can keep continuing.
I want to make sure that we talk about really fast. We're running out of time, but it's hard. It's hard to be
a priest.
That's
exactly what I was going to say.
Yes. It's almost like we're best friends and we know what we're going to say. Okay, so it's hard to be a priest. It's a heavy cross. It's not called for everybody, but just like it's hard to be a husband and father sometimes.
I hear some guys say, oh, I've only had a few bad days in my whole career as a priest. And it's like, yeah, okay, maybe that's helpful for the moms of the seminarians who are joining, you know, but I think that's not inspiring. Like, for me as a man, that doesn't make me want to, like, oh, good, I want to have an easy life. It's not easy.
No, it's incredible. I mean, to become a priest is to become what we call in persona Christi. Mm-hmm. And so you're in the person of Christ.
And he did some hard stuff.
He did some very hard stuff. So, I mean, if someone comes in and unloads on you their sins in the confessional, okay, that kind of is a burden that you carry. We absolve them and we move on, but sometimes those things, they just kind of affect us a little bit. Just being in the reality of sin, you do a funeral, you wake up in the middle of the night, and then you have early to go. Someone had a car accident, and you wake up early in the morning because there's a school mass, and then a homeless man comes off the street. You want to go take a nap, and now he's there, and you got to be Christ to him now. It's a demanding job, but it's a wonderful job.
We need real men. We need real men to join the seminary.
Yes,
on fire. Ones who want to help the church.
Father Michael Pratt, thank you for being here. You're an excellent and holy priest of God. Call your local vocation director and inquire. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.